Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, PWTorch.com, and MMATorch.com. And this is the Monday night edition, right after Raw, of the PW Torch Livecast. And big angle at the end, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Well, first of all, the whole backstory to this, if you didn't see it, Stephanie McMahon told Mick Foley that apparently he's been under stress lately, WrestleMania stress, and he needs to be tested. He needs to grow, and she has an exercise for that. And she said that exercise, that task would be choosing somebody by the end of the program to fire. So fast forwarding to the end, Mick Foley says he thought of someone. At first he thought it was a cruel exercise, but then he did think of someone who deserves it. And he said it would be Stephanie herself. She was not happy with it, and she said, "That's not how it works, Mick. Nope, you can't fire me. I'm your boss." And they went back and forth for a while. Stephanie said some pretty cruel things. Mick explained why he lost all respect for her 6 months ago when she lied to his face. So then Triple H came out. He heard enough. And Hunter then dressed down Mick Foley big time, brought his kids into it. And then Mick Foley was about to leave. Stephanie McMahon then started saying, "Let this be a lesson to everybody in the crowd. Tomorrow at work, thank your boss." Nobody out there knows what it's like to run a business or be in management. Thank their bosses for creating jobs for them. They are the job creators. And Mick Foley did not leave, though. In fact, the crowd popped because in the corner of the ring, he pulled out Mr. Sacco. We didn't see that on camera, but the crowd did. And when Triple H approached Foley to ask why he hasn't left the ring yet, as he ordered him to do. In fact, he told him, "When Stephanie asks you to jump, you will say, I will jump like a monkey for you." And when Hunter angrily approached Mick, Mick turned around and put Hunter in the mandible claw. So that led to a big fight. Hunter got the best of Foley. And then Seth Rollins made the save. Seth Rollins came out on a crutch, but dropped the crutch, beat up Triple H in the ring. Pretty remarkable he's at that stage already at this point. Although, who knows? I mean, basically, it depends on what the initial diagnosis was. And but nevertheless, from the story they've told, it looked miraculous. He had a knee brace on, but he super kicked Triple H using his good leg as a support leg. He gave him a running drop kick. Hunter, though, made a comeback, hit him with a crutch on the bad knee, bent the crutch, broke the crutch, and then put him in a leg lock and hit him with the crutch again. And that's how the show ended. So big angle there. Setting up what I assume will be an actual match at WrestleMania with Seth Rollins and Hunter, unless they use this angle as a way to write Seth out of the match because he's too injured, to give basically Seth a storyline reason not to be able to wrestle. I think Seth showed enough in that brawl with Triple H that he could probably have a match, even if it's modified with him. So my hunch is things are going fine, and this will be the last time they maybe even see each other until Seth comes out for the WrestleMania match. So that's a big angle at the end. Other developments on the show, and we'll get into them as we progress. But let's not go any further without bringing into the program my co-host on today's program, Pat McNeil, longtime Torch columnist. Pat, welcome to the livecast.
Thank you. Hello, you people. Wade, before we get started, I just wanted to thank you for creating a job for me.
You know what? I was hoping you would begin with that, because otherwise this was going to be an uncomfortable show with a really uncomfortable ending for you and the listeners. So thank you very much. I am awaiting phone calls from the rest of the Torch staff, or at least tweets or emails. So if you're listening, as you should be, you might want to get on that, everybody. Thank you, Pat.
No problem.
Your thoughts on the show closing angle? Any critique of it or compliments for it?
Well, they wanted to write Mick Foley off. They wanted to humiliate him a little bit, and they wanted to make Triple H look strong, and he got to do that. So I think it addressed one of the problems that they had, you know, before tonight, which is, you know, the way they left it is, you know, Triple H telling Seth Rollins, "Don't show up at WrestleMania or I'll end you," and they hadn't really, you know. And I guess the payoff was you're going to have to see whether Seth shows up at WrestleMania, and then they decide whether to have a match. And that just takes too long. So this way they can sort of cut to it.
Did they do a good job with the angle? I thought there were some good performances from all three who talked, and I thought Seth did a great job playing to the crowd. But, I mean, Hunter went places that I think are going to leave a lot of people angry at Hunter, whether it was scripted and Mick Foley was in on it or not. Like, I think it was that kind of hard core dressing down of Mick Foley. I mean, the insults that he levied towards Mick Foley got personal. Steph got personal too, but especially Triple H. I mean, I thought in this era, they seem to be wanting to pull from what they believe the fans with an increased knowledge from the internet know, and they're trying to tap into their feelings on some of these issues between these guys and pull people in. And I mean, I'm all for it as long as it tells a good story and isn't injecting, quote, reality into a fictional storyline in a clumsy way that doesn't fit. But, I mean, this fit. I just don't ever want to see Triple H stand in front of an NXT crowd again and get cheered because this was a really effective heel promo by Hunter. And with the things he said and the way he said them, I can't imagine a transformative moment that would justify him ever being cheered by the universe again.
Well, it would take a while. I mean, I'm sure that Mick Foley, you know, Mick Foley knew that this was coming. And you look at Mick Foley's career, you know, I mean, sticks and stones may break Mick Foley's bones and he's had lots of bones broken and injuries. So he probably figured taking some personal insults, you know, on the way out is probably, you know, it's relatively safe and he's still going to be able to walk after the hip surgery.
Oh, and I don't want anyone to be mistaken. I'm not saying that I think Mick Foley took any of this personally. I mean, he might have. I'm not leaning that way or not. Maybe Mick Foley, you know, did think, oh, some of this went too far, but I better not say anything. And it's kind of this ironic thing. But Foley's been someone who's had a tendency to speak out and stand up for himself. I think this was all for show. And I think they congratulated themselves afterwards for a job well done. So that's my assumption on this. That said, I can imagine a lot of fans watching this going, that went too far. I think Hunter and Stephanie liked saying those things, and I think they liked saying them too much. And I'm going to enjoy Seth beating up Triple H at WrestleMania in response. I mean, that's what you want to do, is draw people who know better into thinking, I don't even care if it's real or fake. I just want to see Seth beat up Hunter. You know, and I think this type of thing can do that. I mean, not that super smart, well-informed, top-tier of fan, but I think there's people who think they get what the business is about who are going to be emotionally riled up from the things that Hunter, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we see that with Miz and John Cena a little bit too, Pat.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I mean, the troubling part is, you know, it's I mean, WWE ever since the Attitude Era, it's been like a horror movie where, you know, the bad guys might lose, the monsters might lose occasionally, but they always come back to kill more people.
I mean,
there's an audience for that. I understand that, but you know, I mean, you wonder how many of the people who have, you know, given up on WWE over the past 16 years have been turned off by stuff like this. And you never know. I mean, and just from talking to different people, you never know which straw will be the one that breaks the fans' back.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me give the phone numbers out because we can certainly talk about this and everything else on Raw. We got a lot of people on hold already. Mm-hmm. And you can get in line, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. I am just digesting what we just saw, reacting to what we just saw instantly right after Raw. Let's have a conversation about it. In fact, let's just begin. And let's go to Ian in Greensboro, North Carolina. First caller tonight. Ian, thanks for calling. What have you got for Pat and me?
Thanks for taking the call. I've got two questions, a Raw-related question and a Torch-related question. First off,
sure.
I've never been so excited by an end of Raw. Like, when Seth came out, I was super stoked. Honestly, I thought that might have been where Finn Balor would have came back, like, pick up for Foley. Mm-hmm. if he's going to be the replacement for Seth at Mania, but I was happy to see Seth come back. So my question is, and this is a long shot, is it possible that Seth's knee injury was a work from the get-go? Because I feel like whenever he came back from his initial injury, he got a huge babyface pop on his return, and then they just kind of like turned him heel for no reason, and then that's why he hasn't been getting, like, as a face now, that's why he hasn't really been getting the crowd behind him. So they did it again, this time by showing, you know, when he's working on his healing. I just thought maybe that they're doing that. They're just redoing what they did before with the WWE 24 thing, showing his healing process to get that reaction again.
First of all, Corey Graves, I would scold you in and say that you think your microwave is watching you or listening to you with that conspiracy theory. However, Pat, I'll throw to you. I mean, first of all, I think Seth's knee really was injured. But the fact that this could work out better for all the reasons Ian just laid out, and that you could even suspect maybe they faked it because it might work out so well for Seth, I think it's a real testament to everything that they did tonight and up until tonight, if that's a prevailing feeling among a larger part of the audience, that it has rejuvenated Seth. So first, your thoughts on the conspiracy theory, your take on that is, and then just kind of the larger issue of, is this almost a redo and a chance to do it right this time?
Yeah, I mean, the conspiracy theory, I think they wanted to do Seth Rollins versus Samoa Joe, at the Rumble probably, and then they were upset when they couldn't do it. So I think they could have come up with other ways to, they would have rather had Seth wrestling and working on television for several weeks than not have him, and they probably wouldn't have faked an injury to do that. As for the other, so much for that conspiracy theory. Let's see. Yeah, I think you.
I wouldn't
look
necessarily
at this,
believe
maybe.
It. Like I do think it's legitimate. It's right. Just when he came out and just immediately, you know, dropped the crutches. I just feel like it's so soon for him to be, you know, ready. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say, I mean, my reporting the week of the incident from people backstage in WWE. You know, who were hearing how Seth was reacting to everything. No, not even a hint that, you know, oh, this is a work and, you know, wink, wink, wait, just stay tuned. You'll see. But they did say it's not as bad as last time. And they think it'll be something where they won't know if he can make it to WrestleMania or not. And I think that they've been hedging on purpose and leaving a wide range of possibilities open. And I think that they felt enough happened or that they got enough updates on Seth's rehab and how dedicated, you know, he was and where the recovery stood. They felt comfortable having him get physical with the knee brace. That means he's recovering really well from whatever surgery he had and probably ahead on the higher end of their best hopes in terms of, because I mean, you're not going to go out there and do what he did, even with the knee brace, if you're not coming along well. So again, this is one of those injuries where early on they're like, it's not as bad as last time. WrestleMania is iffy. I think this shows it's not iffy unless this is all he can do. And this was actually a way to write him off of WrestleMania. I don't think that's the case, but I'm, you know, holding out that possibility that they just said, you know, go in there, be part of an angle, have Hunter beat you down. And yeah, that sets up something else. But then that, like, that would have been the time for the Finn Balor run in at that point, you know, to have, set up, right, you know, Finn, and they didn't do that. Now they still could, Pat. Where are you right now on the odds based on what we know, what's been reported and what you saw? Are you at, you know, 95%, 100%, 70% that they're just going to full-fledged denounce Seth Hunter as a scheduled match at Mania now?
Yeah, 90% because, I mean, Finn Balor, you know, worked in a six-man tag this weekend. I think that was designed to set up, you know, that was designed so he could get some, they could test him and, but, you know, Samoa Joe was opposite there. Samoa Joe doesn't have a match for WrestleMania yet. So if Finn Balor comes back, that's, you know, that's an obvious place you can put him.
Yep. Ian, anything else?
Yeah, my second question is about, I guess, about the Torch. So I've, within the past few weeks, I've been listening to a lot of the Bruce Pritchard podcast and Jim Cornette's podcast. And to my surprise, like, they kind of throw you and Bruce Mitchell under the bus a lot. And I was wondering why that is. Like, I you're my favorite of the quote unquote dirt sheets. I love listening to the podcast, and I just don't understand why people would be upset with you guys, I guess.
I don't get the problem, Wade, because Jim Cornette and Bruce Pritchard love me.
First I'll say this, Ian. Bruce and I have talked on record at length many, many, many years ago and even semi-recently about what went down with Cornette. And you can, if you're a VIP member, anybody can look in the back issues and go back to the Smoky Mountain Wrestling era and see what happened. Jim Cornette started as our great friend, did interviews with us, talked about how he's going to bring the territory back. The stress of running a territory that wasn't going as successfully as he hoped took a toll on him. A lot of things happened. Employees of his have, and wrestlers who work for him have talked about it. He ran an angle that was quite racist that led to what I call the race riot. He took exception with that terminology. I don't remember the exact number of police stations that were called from that from that area, but 5-6 police stations were called in to try to quell a lot of the result of race baiting that he was doing. And I was highly critical of that. And he felt I perhaps owed him a softer reaction to that because he had been so friendly to me with access and interviews. And he got really upset. And I mean, I have him on tape. He called me, he threatened to kill me. He threatened to bypass airports and drive to Minnesota with a gun to bypass security. He used racial epithets that were aimed at my mom and was vile and vicious multiple times to me and Bruce Mitchell on the phone at a time when he was having major meltdowns. And I've told that story. I've never, and I kind of leave it at that. Cornette is somebody who's known when you're an enemy of his, you're an enemy of his for life. I took the threats seriously, but short of going to authorities. Some people disagreed with me. Some thought Dave Meltzer said, don't worry, it's just Cornette being Cornette. Others said, no, you should go to authorities with the things that he said, and you have it on tape, and it's awful. So I've just basically disassociated myself with him and have chosen not to talk a lot about it. It's been however 20-some years. He still talks about it. It's just not something that occupies space in my head. But now that he has a podcast and he's talking a lot about it, people are asking about it more. So
I apologize for bringing it up again. It was just news to me as well. So I'll definitely have to check it back and check it out in the backlogs.
And he did an interview. Let me finish with Cornette, Pat, and then I'll throw you. And Jim did wrote letters to the Torch afterwards, giving his side of things and wrote letters. And then I rebutted and made my case for why, why I wrote what I wrote. And he felt betrayed by me or just that we hurt his business. And I was just doing my job. And in the end of the day, he didn't like the way that I was doing my job. We disagreed about what my role was and what my interpretation was of the lengths he went to try to spark business. And it led to the breakdown. I don't want to dwell on that because we're here to talk about Raw. And that's, like I've said to other callers, it's probably a better Wade Keller hotline question than to be put out there. But I mean, this show reaches more people as a free show. And since, it is, like you say, there's a lot of talk about it. I'll just put it out there. But I'm not trying to stoke the fire. It's not something that I can really believe we're still talking about. But there it is. Pat, go ahead.
I was going to take the Bruce Pritchard part since you had the heavy lifting on that one. Okay. The issue with Bruce Pritchard is Bruce Mitchell, for a long time predating his work for the Torch, is a friend of Dave Meltzer's, and Dave Meltzer wrote what a lot of people consider the definitive account, the same week or so it happened, of the Montreal Screwjob. And it was pretty obvious, and both parties have admitted it, that Dave Meltzer got a lot of his story from talking directly to Bret Hart and also talked to other people within the WWE. And that story conflicts with Bruce Pritchard's version of it, which he told on his podcast. And you can believe whatever you want to believe. I don't think from Bruce Pritchard's long association with Vince McMahon that he's going to say anything on his podcast ever that reflects too badly about Vince McMahon. I mean, Vince employed him for a long time. He's friends with Vince. And he's not going to do anything which points the finger at anything that he did, which, you know, might have been questionable. So that's, I mean, that's my interpretation of that. He didn't like it when Bruce went on Twitter and told Dave Meltzer, hey, you're not going to like what Pritchard says about said about Montreal on his podcast. And, you know, he's probably right about that. So, yeah, he has, Bruce Pritchard has an issue with Wade and with Dave Meltzer and anybody who reported honestly as to what was going on backstage in WWF, WWE while Bruce Pritchard was working there.
Yeah, I mean, Pritchard is a company guy through and through, Ian. He's, you know, the Stooge gimmick, I mean, Bruce Pritchard didn't play that part, but it was based on the idea that Vince has this inner circle of people who are disciples. They look at him the way Stephanie tonight on Raw, to try to tie it back into the main topic here, the way that Stephanie says people should look to their boss and thank them for the paycheck and look up to them and admire them for creating a business that employs them. And Bruce Pritchard was largely a loyal soldier and saw the media as the enemy. And so part of what he's doing is just for whether I'm not going to get into his head, but I mean, there's an attempt to discredit the two publications that have chronicled in a way that has stood the test of time. We haven't been perfect, but I've never intentionally published anything other than the truth, because if I ever did that and got caught, it would be the end. That's all I have. And Bruce Pritchard has been on payroll and has friends in the front office, and I think I don't fire back, because I just want to go about doing my job the way that I do it and let my work stand up for itself and not get into it's not I, I'm not you if you know me, I don't get involved in verbal wars. I don't get pulled in by trolls. I don't get into that kind of thing. I just want to cover wrestling, do it honestly, take stands when I believe a stand needs to be taken, whether it's a little thing like the women interviewers not having their names mentioned on TV and think that's petty and unprofessional and lame and they should have names. You know, little things like that I harp on. Bigger things I harp on. You know, lies about steroids, lies about drug testing, whatever. That's part of what I do too, but part of it is just analyzing this fun form of entertainment and trying to do so objectively without a paycheck. The only people I answer to with what I do and what I've done for nearly 30 years are the listeners and the readers. They pay for what I do, and without them, I don't survive. So I don't pay back people like Cornette because they give me access. I don't lie or give a company spin so that I can get press credentials or so that I can get the next interview with a big superstar on a podcast. That's not the game that I play. It's just not from the beginning. That hasn't been what I sought out to do. And it has irritated the hell out of Bruce Pritchard for decades. There's plenty of people over the years who I've been friends with, who have been around Bruce, who have told me enough to make it pretty clear why he and I aren't running in the same crowd. I'll put it that way.
All right. Well, definitely appreciate the candor and appreciate your time. And sure. We'll see you guys next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ian.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for holding on for that. I guess it had to come up sometime. I mean, but anyway, yeah. Let's go to a break. Go ahead, Pat. What?
No, that's the That's
okay.
That's enough.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So I will refer people to the March 13th edition of this show if they ask again, because I really don't want to talk about it. I don't want to get back to doing what we do here. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, more of your calls, more conversation on tonight's Raw. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I invite you to do so. You can follow me at The Wade Keller. You can follow our brand at PW Torch, and you can follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. And you can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/PW Torch. Pat, how can people follow you on Twitter? Pat, are you there? Are you muted?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I muted myself.
That's right. It happens.
I know you wish I'd do that more often. No, my Twitter handle is RealPatMcNeil. My last name is spelled M-C-N-E-I-L-L. And you can follow me there, although some people just choose to follow me on Monday nights when I tweet about Raw and then skip the rest of the week.
All right. Very good. Let's go back to the phone lines, and we'll go to Kenny in Mobile, Alabama. Kenny, thanks for calling. What have you got for us tonight?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, I was going to see if you guys noticed when Mick and Stephanie did the segment on who Mick was going to fire, did y'all catch the crowd chanting, "Fire Goldberg"?
Yes. Yes, then that was the end of the first segment where they made the mistake of letting crowd noise in. You could hear the people chanting "Fire Goldberg." Although there was somebody on Twitter who thought that they were chanting "Fire Roman," which also would have made sense, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about like WWE not caring if Goldberg gets booed going into WrestleMania against Lesnar, but how do you see, you know, if Goldberg's going to be on television leading up to Mania, how do you see him reacting to a negative crowd? Do you think he goes off script and says something, or do you think he keeps his cool? I mean, how do y'all see that kind of going?
Go ahead, Pat.
I think that Goldberg has had that sort of thing happen before, and he, you know, he might not be savvy as an in-ring guy necessarily, but he's savvy enough, you know, dealing with the media that he's just gonna blow right through it and not let it bother him.
Triple H got a little rattled, I thought, when in the middle of his promo, the crowd started chanting CM Punk. I thought he got irritated and had to take almost a proverbial deep breath and plow through, and then the chant died down. I mean, I don't think WWE has a lot of faith in Goldberg's ability to, I don't know if keep his cool is the right term, but get through anything that doesn't kind of go according to plan. And there's an intensity to Goldberg in what he does in the ring that can lead to things not going well if something doesn't go exactly as planned. So I don't think Goldberg would turn heel on the crowd, but I mean, there was a clip going around on social media where Goldberg got into it with a fan. Was it from Raw last week, or was it I guess it had to be Raw last week, where he got into it with he yelled at a fan over swearing, and he got really angry. He's like, "There are kids in this crowd, and you know, you're setting a bad example." And you know, I mean, I don't have the exact quote, but you know, he got kind of prickly about the fact that somebody said something that he felt wasn't ideal for kids' ears. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think Goldberg has to work very hard to get through things when things don't go exactly as planned. And I think there's WWE management knows that, and they have been very careful in how they stage him because of it. And I think they'll continue to be that way. If he gets booed against Lesnar, which is very possible, I think they'll talk to him about it ahead of time and tell him to just do his thing. They're the haters, and you're the good guy, and those fans will cheer for you in the end, and they'll give him a little pep talk and tell him to ignore it, and then I think he'll probably do his best to ignore it.
I gotcha. All right, guys. And one last thing I have, did Roman seem to come off more heelish tonight? Because it kind of seemed like that was magnified to me, that he was acting way more heelish than usual. And do you think if he is, it's going to be so much, I guess, just a little bit more heelish, do you think he'll just go right back to babyface after Mania? Or do you think he'll actually start one as a heel?
Pat, do you think Roman is trying to be heelish, or do you think that he's just trying to be badass? Like, that the idea is turn him babyface by having him be badass, like not ask for cheers, but just speak his mind. And how, you know, I think Vince could be thinking that the fans who boo Roman will respect the fact that he stood up to Undertaker. So I don't know. I mean, heelish is one way to put it, but maybe again, for lack of a better term, badass, like a guy who's willing to stand up to Taker. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's more likely. I just think if they were serious about turning Roman heel and having it happen at WrestleMania, even though I think it's a great idea, we would have heard more about it by now. And they don't seem to have anybody that they have lined up to be the number one good guy if they turn Roman Reigns. I mean, maybe Finn Balor, but technically Finn's not back yet.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Seth, if they think they can get Seth Rollins over, and Seth looks like he is getting over, then maybe that maybe Vince is like, what the heck? Let's just do it. Let's just earn him a heel. And, you know, there's money in it now. But Kenny, to me, it seems like what they're doing with Roman seems like they're putting themselves in a position where they could go either direction at and after WrestleMania. But I think they're at most they're hedging, or they're doing what I first said, which is just Vince thinks has calculated that making Roman look tough and that he's willing to stand up to Undertaker is something fans are going to respect, and they'll eventually start cheering him. Which it might work, but I don't think it covers all the reasons people don't like Roman. I mean, I don't think people boo Roman because they think he doesn't believe in himself and won't stand up against anybody. I think there's one of the reasons, or, you know, one of several main reasons they boo Roman is because they think he's the chosen one who's gotten pushed at the expense of others, and giving him a match against Undertaker and perhaps having him win, and then perhaps having him beat Brock Lesnar for the title afterwards later on. That does not undo that. And the crowds are still chanting CM Punk's name. And CM Punk is the one who said, you know, in his last months in the company, make Roman look good, make Roman look good. And I just don't think those people forget, and I think the die is cast. But, I mean, Vince might be giving it a try here using that strategy.
I got you. Well, I'll probably, whether he's a heel or face, I probably still won't cheer the guy. But, I mean, you kind of, you know, I mean, if I owned the company, if I was Vince, I mean, I would pay to go and boo Roman, you know. It's just one of those things that I don't understand why they can't get that through their heads. But I appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good night, and I'll continue listening.
Thanks, Kenny. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Pat, one thing we saw tonight is an effective heel and babyface. This notion that if they turn Roman heel, everybody's going to cheer. Everyone's going to cheer him. Like, I think you can still have a babyface, someone who's cast as a babyface and someone who's cast as a heel, and have the fans cheer the face and boo the heel. That's happening with Owens and Jericho right now. So if you pick the right people and you book them well, people won't just rebel just to be contrarian. If fans were just contrarian and they're going to cheer Roman when he turns heel, they'd be cheering Owens and booing Jericho. I mean, I you can't rule out the possibility that some will, but it's overly simplified to say the only reason Roman is getting booed is because he's a babyface and the fans like to boo babyfaces and cheer heels, because that's not happening with Owens and Jericho. Your thoughts on that example?
Yeah, I think if they did turn Roman Reigns heel, I think it would be, you know, maybe if he as a heel seemed more authentic, then you know, after a few months people could start cheering him. But I don't think they're going to magically cheer him the moment he goes bad and goes after Seth Rollins, for example.
All right, very good. Well, let's go back to the phone banks and let's go to Mark in Pittsburgh. Mark, thank you for calling. What have you got for me tonight? And Pat.
Hey, what's up, Wayne and Pat?
Not too much. Thanks for calling.
Cool. Well, as far as last of several callers, that was very interesting. But what did you think of overall tonight's angle at the end? Because I was Russo swerved. I thought for sure that Mick Foley was coming out of retirement to have a match with Triple H. And then when Rollins came out, I thought that was fantastic. What did you think about that angle?
Go ahead, Pat.
I think that it accomplished what they wanted to accomplish, and then they set up, you know, Seth Rollins and Triple H, and they put sympathy on Rollins because here he is, a guy coming off knee surgery, who fought his way, you know, and if you've ever had a bad knee, you sort of feel his pain. He does all the rehab, he comes back from knee surgery, and then he just gets whacked with a crutch and gets his knee torn up again by Triple H.
Right, and to go back to what was maybe, you know, a little bit ago about the Noel comment. I thought that was in bad taste. Because I mean, why didn't they bring up how The Rock smashed Mick Foley's head, bludgeoned him in the head 50 times with a chair in front of her, if they're gonna go that route, you know? I mean, I thought that was pretty gross. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
And I'll add to it and then throw it to Pat. I think that making fun of Mick Foley for sometimes forgetting the city he's in and talking about, you know, artificial hip and I'm going to tear that leg off the hip that needs to be replaced, it's going places that can backfire. No matter how much money you're trying to draw and how much heel heat you're trying to put on yourself, if Mick Foley forgets the name of the city he's in, and it's because WWE did nothing to stop the liberal use of chair shots to the head, which Mick Foley fully and willingly engaged
in the head 50 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And jumping off of cages.
Yeah. And replaying it and glorifying it. And I mean, there's some culpability that can backfire, Pat, in using that to get heel heat on yourself. And it tends to, and this is something WWE has a history of doing, is kind of co-opting or trying to own things that happen that would reflect bad on them as a company and create a fuzzy gray area of where reality was or not, even with the Bret Hart screw job. You know, when Bret screwed Bret and the Montreal screw job, like they took something that happened in real life and spun it and reframed it and tried and then turned it into something that they can just weave into pretend world, you know, WWE's pretend world. And it takes some of the sting, or that maybe they think it takes some of the sting, or at least creates some ambiguity among the masses over whether even that was real or whether WWE did that for the resulting storyline that they got out of it rather than the real story behind it.
Yeah, I think Bruce Mitchell in one of his columns called it the new work, which is, you know,
yeah,
which is, yeah, trying to make, I mean, you try to make people believe that, you know, that some of the things they're talking about are real, even if, you know, even if wrestling is has predetermined outcomes.
All right. Anything else? Anything else, Mark?
No. I mean, we don't want to beat a dead horse with that, but a couple other things. Byron Saxton, I think, has to go. Whenever I'm a big fan of women wrestling. When Bayley came out tonight, and that the whole Bayley buddies thing, when the balloons come out, it's like, can he be a bigger dork in the entire world? Like, just stop, get him gone. In the New Day too. I mean, just talk about jumping the shark. Just go away. Just go away.
All right, Mark. Appreciate the call. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to make something uncool is to have Byron Saxton endorse it on live TV.
Yeah. Yes. That is an astute point, and I definitely agree with it. All right, we're going to go to our next break. When we come back, more of your calls on tonight's episode of Raw. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back live on the PW Torch livecast. I'm Wade Keller, joined by longtime PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil. On tonight's Bring It to the Table, some interesting quotes from Corey Graves. He said, it's a hip thing to boo Roman Reigns. Pat, is that a fair characterization, unfair, or kind of somewhere in the middle?
Well, hip is something that only a certain percentage of cool people do. You know, I mean, it seems to be like normal to boo Roman Reigns, I guess would be the better way to put it. And of course, you also saw the breaking news that was on Bring It to the Table, right, Wade?
No.
I was watching it with the sound off. Breaking news is that the next episode of Bring It to the Table will be live at the Citrus Bowl the Thursday before WrestleMania on WWE Network.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, having Corey Graves on there instead of Paul Heyman, and sticking, I mean, I haven't watched it yet. I just, during the commercial breaks, I'm kind of checking out what Twitter's saying about it with some quotes, and you've got it on in the background, Pat. It sounds like they're moving away from, to a degree, even with the Graves comment, which I'll probably react to in a minute. But overall, it sounds like with the teasers that they're going more storyline, that they're staying within their pretend world universe and trying to, from the topics they advertised, that it was more pretend world. Now, I haven't seen the show. I'm just looking at quotes. on of people highlighting it on Twitter. And so what I'm curious to see is the teaser was different, but where does the content go? And does it still seem like it's WWE's attempt to tell their fans how wrong they are for reacting emotionally to the storylines the way that they do if it doesn't fit what Vince McMahon intended? And if so, it can backfire again. I think it was a bad place that Paul Heyman was put. I think he was put in a position to say things that he didn't believe, or if he did believe them, it doesn't help his brand to be saying them publicly. Corey Graves, being a guy who's a little more somebody on Twitter said Graves said something like, "I don't care what happens in Lesnar Goldberg as long as the building is full." I'm not sure that's a great thing to say. Mm-hmm. I think you should care about what happens, match quality, match outcome. Is it satisfying to the fans who are there? I think saying that all you care about is the building's full ignores the notion that what you do when the building is full determines whether it's full next time. And I would think that you would want to have a good match or a satisfying finish. So again, I mean, little snippets here and there, not enough for me to judge the whole show, but Pat, what are you seeing or hearing?
A couple things stood out to me. First of all, they were talking about Goldberg, and they played a clip of Goldberg versus Lesnar from WrestleMania 20, which you think that they would be pretending never happened.
Yeah.
Or they could talk about it and not show it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. The other interesting segment was basically JBL complaining about Mauro Ranallo winning Best Announcer in the Wrestling Observer Awards. And they actually showed, the page of the Wrestling Observer that had that listing on it with Mauro first and JBL, of course, not winning. So those are the only two things I thought were interesting.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean, WWE going different places than they have in the past. I think what they're trying to do is they think that with the website, audience, people who read PW Torch and sites that are in the realm of being like it, and then podcasts like this, among others, where there's independent voices speaking without compromise or obligation to toe the company line, they're trying to win those people over by at least giving them something to talk about that they feel that they're missing out on, and an effort to, one, I think, entertain themselves because they have a platform now to do it. I mean, to have a platform to just go off on this stuff and do so outside of the realm of without a quote, media gatekeeper or editor, deciding what to print or what not to print or how to phrase things, but to have that ability to sit down and just freewheel and do it with their, within the framework of it still being part of the propaganda machine is, I think, thrilling to them. It's a new toy. And they're still playing with it and figuring out how this WWE Network late night talk show works. I think WWE is better off staying in the business of promoting matches and cards and building stars and not getting in the business of routinely playing overtly, trying to react and sway people from thinking the way that they think about things that I don't think ultimately matter enough to be worth addressing or can be changed through an official paid spokesperson for WWE trying to convince them that they're wrong and there's a different, and that they're, that by booing Roman, you're just trying to be the cool kid. And I think fans, I wrote a cover story on this or an editorial on this in the Torch newsletter about Paul Heyman. I don't think it served Paul Heyman's brand, and I don't think it's effective for Corey Graves if the perception is these guys who I thought were cool now are like the rest of them. They're telling me how to think, and they're mad when I don't react exactly the way Vince McMahon wants. And I think it's a dangerous show in that sense because I think fans can push back harder when they feel that Vince McMahon can't handle there being a large reaction different than the way he wants people to react, and that now he's taking an hour on the network and exposing a lot of fans who didn't even know this stuff was happening or being talked about, and turns it into score settling and just petty propaganda games. Pat, your thoughts? Is there an upside to this to offset any of the negatives that I brought up?
I can't think of one. I think that sort of time is better. I mean, look at the Talking Smack segment, which is on after SmackDown, where they, where they basically have, it's a decent, they have reactions to what just happened. They, They try to bring some reality into it, but they generally keep it within the WWE Universe standards. I think that's better for them. I think maybe, you know, if tonight they had done the show, except it was JBL and somebody who was, you know, not working Raw sitting there, and Rosenberg was questioning about, oh my God, did you see what just happened where Seth Rollins came back and Mick Foley got fired and Triple H, you know, hit him with I think that would probably be more effective and could draw an audience.
Maybe some people who are listening to us also are keeping an eye on the Bring It to the Table and want to comment on it too. So feel free to do that if you are listening to us, although we still got a lot more people in line on the phone banks. So let's go to our next caller. And I believe we've got Jason from Australia ready to go. It's been a while since I've had Jason. Pleasure talking to Jason here on the live cast. Go ahead, Jason. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Wade and Pat. I'll get right into it.
Sure.
Like you guys, I really enjoyed that last segment. I thought the performances were really well done. I do have a question, though. Is Stephanie still fired, right? No one disputed that. I mean, Foley fired Stephanie, so she's gone. Can I hold on to that hope?
Yeah, sure. Hold on to it as long as you can.
I think Jason, I think Stephanie said that's not allowed because Stephanie is his boss. And she clearly said it had to be a roster member. So I think that got, you know, eliminated pretty quickly.
Oh, God. I was really hoping.
But why would she have been on the list of people on the roster then? I mean, Mick Foley said there was a list and she was on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, in relation to that final segment, I thought they did a tremendous job. I mean, just having the crowd chant Rollins. I mean, finally, he was over as that babyface. Personally, I would have preferred him to stand tall at the end of the whole segment. You know, when they're chanting Rollins, Triple H gets back into the ring, bang, cops a pedigree, and Rollins is standing tall. And you've got that image of Rollins closing Raw as a hot babyface, which is where they wanted him to be. And he finally got that. Almost thought like this angle they did could have been where Triple H, you know, cut him off and damaged his leg. Could have been something like a sneak attack you could have released on WWE.com. I just would have liked Seth Rollins as that babyface standing tall and giving him some momentum. I just felt like Triple H cut it from him straight away. What do you guys think of that?
Go ahead, Pat.
I don't think you understand, Jason, like so many WWE fans, you don't understand what the people want to see. What they want to see is Triple H standing tall and Stephanie speaking her mind. And then every once in a while, when the time is right, the good guys can win one. And then we can go back to, you know, having Triple H and Stephanie as the bad guys every week. Getting heat.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, and I see what you're saying, but I just thought, for the sake of Seth Rollins' babyface character, the crowd is finally behind him. They're not chanting CM Punk. Rollins, Rollins, Rollins.
Yep.
I mean, it was the way that he dropped that crutch, that was tremendous. Why not end with him giving the pedigree to Triple H? Seth Rollins is back, and the crowd's hot. So the fans that are tuning in this peak WrestleMania season, have an opportunity to digest Rollins as a potential top babyface. Then maybe during the week you release a sneak attack that Triple H orchestrated to take out Rollins. I just thought that may have been a better way. Another point I wanted to raise, and I'll get your opinion on that, Wade, but in relation to The Undertaker and Roman Reigns and as far as which match is going to go on last at WrestleMania, I'll put it out there. I have no issue, right, with them doing Goldberg versus Lesnar as the opening match to pop the crowd and to get a positive reaction. Something, you know, Goldberg and Lesnar opening match and then closing with Reigns and Undertaker. I think if you close with Goldberg and Lesnar, you're asking for trouble. I think the match that you want on as the last match is the match that's going to get you the most heat. And the most heat in that building is going to be booing Roman Reigns. I think you play the safe bet with putting that match last and starting the crowd hot with Goldberg and Lesnar, and at least you know Goldberg's going to get a favorable reaction because the people are going to be like, whoa, we're getting this match first? This is tremendous. I think, you know, you could play that psychology.
Well, if they put it on first, then people who are there to see it are not going to be, you know, wondering when does that match happen because that's when I'm going to really get into it, and you get whatever's going to happen out of the way. I don't like it overall, though. I mean, some of what you say, Jason, could happen, but and positively. But I just don't think that you start a show or even the main show after the pre-show with a match that big. I mean, I just, I'm kind of a stickler for, I like when the champion, the challenger comes out first, the champion second. I like when the main event of the show is the main event of the show. If you have three main events, then they should be three of the final five matches, if not the last three. I mean, and if there's others, that should be clearly kind of a buffer match. Pat, your thoughts on that idea, though?
I can tell you that that's definitely not the direction that they're thinking right now. I mean, I agree with you. I didn't like when, for example, Sheamus and Daniel Bryan was on first, and they blew it off right away for a match that received all that buildup some years before when they did that. I expect that I think probably the right place is they're going to have maybe four matches that they consider main events, and that they're going to have, you know, basically one to cap off the first hour, one to end the second hour, one in the third hour, and then the final. And I think somewhere at the end of hour two or hour three should be where they do Goldberg and Lesnar.
I know what you're saying in theory, and I agree with you, Wade, but I'm just saying practicality. I would hate to see Goldberg and Lesnar get that reaction again. And listen, if this is a two-hour show or even a three, but we're going to be talking about people that are going to be there for 7 hours, and I just think that if you put that match on last, you run the risk of the crowd crapping all over it. I just think that Reigns and Undertaker is the safe match that's going to get the reaction you want, and you put that match on last. I'd hate to see Goldberg in what could be his last match get crapped all over by a restless crowd who feel maybe he shouldn't be in that position or whatever. I just think, I know what you're saying in theory, and I agree with it 99% of the time, but there's actual practicality and what you envision could happen based on the circumstances, or you stick to your theory. I just don't have a problem with them opening up, starting with a bang, because even Kevin Owens said on the Austin podcast, you either want to be first or you want to be last. And I think it's I just think it's a different way to go about it.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, by the way. Either you want to be first or last. It sounds a little bit like a platitude that I don't think. I think if you compare the paychecks of those who go on second to last to those who go on first, you'll want to go on second to last. I mean, it's a nice little thing to say in terms of, you know, and the context is important in terms of crowd reaction. Yeah, but if it has to do with a big show, with a big card and work, you know. Trust me, the paycheck correlation is going to be stronger over the course of your career the closer you wrestle to the main event, notwithstanding an exception here and there, including AJ and Orton this weekend at a house show at MSG where they, you know, did a little thing with Shane being there and did a little angle. You're going to have exceptions to the rule. Could they make this an exception to the rule and build a storyline around it? Yeah. But, I mean, I get what you're saying, Jason. I just, honestly, I mean, I not to sound like Corey Graves in a different way, but I do not feel bad for Goldberg or Brock Lesnar or Paul Heyman or Vince McMahon or WWE as a corporation if the fans don't react well or properly to Goldberg Lesnar. It's a spectacle. Fans are going to pay their money. They get to react how they want. And as happened after WrestleMania 20, the show will go on and they'll move on to the next thing. I think the match will get the response it deserves, whether we have to then hear JBL tell us how wrong we were a few weeks later on Bring It to the Table or not. The match is going to get the response it deserves, and I don't know that you want to finagle and give additional special treatment to them to try to avoid a negative reaction. So I personally, like you said, Jason, I'd feel terrible if the match got us, you know, a different reaction. I just won't. I mean, I don't think it should get all this special treatment so that Goldberg doesn't get booed. You know, Goldberg is Goldberg, and if the fans have grown a little tired of his act or think that he hasn't shown enough range on the mic or in the ring and he's getting coddled and the novelty factor's worn off and they want to boo him, I'm not going to lose sleep over that. I think that's fine. That's part of fans voicing their own opinion.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Okay, yeah. But going back to the Rollers thing, what was your opinion? Did you like Triple H sort of cutting him off and getting the heat at the end, or would you have liked to see Rollers stand tall to close that segment and the show?
Yeah, I don't want to be wishy-washy here because I have strong opinions on most things that matter. And this, I think you can make it work either way. I mean, I didn't watch that and go, oh, man. You know, like when Seth was celebrating, I thought, oh, that's a good ending. When Hunter attacked him and beat down his knee some more, I thought, well, now heat's on Hunter. You know, fans had a moment to celebrate with Seth. He got his revenge. And then Hunter, you know, added another layer of heelishness to it. And, we got 3 weeks and a couple more Raws to go. And let's judge it, I guess, maybe more so when we see if the story that they tell between now and whatever happens at Mania and, even thereafter to a degree, but mostly at, between now and Mania. You know, we can judge it. But, I mean, you can go both ways. Jason, you are expressing a philosophical argument that a lot of people make, which is, you know, you want to have the babyface stand tall at some point, and sometimes when the heels are the ones in power behind the scenes, they stand tall too often. They get one up on the babyfaces too often to a point that it diminishes the babyfaces. I just don't know that this segment counts as one of those, at least not yet.
So the only reason why I say that, and I'm talking like exclusively for Rollins, considering how lukewarm he's been as a babyface,
sure.
The crowd have been wishy-washy on him. The WWE created an opportunity and sort of like an atmosphere where he could have finally had some momentum behind him as that struggling babyface with the crowd. You could have predicted they were going to be chanting Rollins when he dropped that crutch, because no one was expecting him to do that. I mean, that was tremendous. I mean, that you know, and I like the way Hunter sold it, you know, so I'm just talking specifically to Rollins. I guess where they could go with this, and I was listening to the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and he talked about how you could work in whoever gets fired between Rollins and Triple H. You know, Bruce could be onto something here. They could do a tag match with Triple H and Samoa Joe versus Rollins and Balor. If Seth Rollins and Balor win, Mick Foley stays hired, and you know, vice versa for Stephanie. So that could be something that they work in there, because it's interesting they put the five storyline into this. And then, you know, if Samoa Joe and Triple H were the ones to lose, and Triple H snaps on Samoa Joe, Samoa Joe could be choking out Triple H, and there's your hot babyface feeding into maybe a heel reign. So they have a few exciting scenarios that they could you know, work with there.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, I think it's a credit to you and the arguments that you bring, that you are, you know, being very specific about why you can make the case for Seth, and I get that. And this is a bit of a redo and trying to do it right. And I mean, you make a compelling case. I think what you described would have been good, and I think what they did has potential to be just fine too. I mean, I'm not swayed to think that there's definitely the right way to do it. I think putting sympathy on Seth still, by having Hunter, you know, Seth stand tall and have Hunter pull the rug out from under him, can work if the idea is you pay or you get your free trial month, but you pay to see Seth get revenge on Triple H when Seth knows what's coming and he has a few more weeks to recover. But they can play up the storyline of how awful Triple H is, you know, to maybe pull the rug out from under Seth and his WrestleMania dream one more time to add some steam to it. Remember, the first injury to Seth was not intended. It wasn't an angle. This is their chance to put the heat, instead of on Joe, directly on Hunter, and to have a big knee injury angle that was intended to be an injury angle and kind of maybe take the reins and control it a little more.
All right, well, Pat, I'll let you get back to other callers, because I know that I'm reckon they're getting a little bit impatient with me, so I'll
call again. All right, thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. Call again. I'll be by tomorrow after SmackDown Live, right after SmackDown airs, and then Wednesday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me on the Midweek Flagship, 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific, at pwtorchlivecast.com. We'll be back right after this with more of your phone calls. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil. Pat, what are you talk about what you and Jim are doing right now with the Wayback Playback for VIP members. Talk about what that show is and the current event that you're in the midst of covering.
Okay, Wayback Playback is a show for VIP members, and there's actually a couple of free episodes that if you search it on the live cast, you'll find it. We watch a show on the WWE Network along with the fans. We tell everybody when to hit play, and we watch along, and we basically do our commentary track of what's going on. And some people like it, and some people like it more than others. We just started WrestleMania 18, so the first hour of WrestleMania 18 with, of course, Diamond Dallas Page versus Christian on it. That's the new episode 131 that's up for VIP members. We do an hour a week, so three more episodes to go, and there is a lot to unpack on WrestleMania 18. So we're looking forward to covering that with you.
All right, very cool. Let's go back to our callers on today's program, Reviewing Raw. By the way, for VIP members, I will be reviewing Raw start to finish on the Wade Keller Hotline tonight. So as soon as Livecast goes off the air, if there's a topic on the show, plenty of them that we haven't gotten into on today's program, I will likely cover that in my start to finish review of Raw. Not only recapping the show in case you didn't see all of it or any of it, so you can have a sense of what happened, and I'll detail what happened, but also give my opinion on the big stuff and a lot of the little stuff too. All right, up next, let's go to, looks like we've got Denny in Toledo, Ohio, VIP member. Thanks for calling, Denny. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, what's up, Wade? I was actually at the show tonight.
Excellent. I was hoping
hey.
So. I was hoping we got somebody to call in who was at the show. Talk to us. How'd it go?
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Like, the crowd was hot for most of it. I mean, we even got a Dana Brooke chant going when she did her turn. The chant was Fire Roman, not Fire Goldberg. I heard the caller call earlier about that.
I couldn't make it out. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that made me laugh.
Fire Roman.
They tried to get a couple CM Punk chants going until the big one at the end. The big one at the end that seemed to fluster Triple H was, that Stephanie got a little bit of it, and then it kind of grew from there when Triple H came out and started talking. But I love the last segment. There was a Thank You Strowman chant going. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. When he attacked Roman. I'd read reports earlier that they had trouble selling tickets, but it looked mostly full to me.
We had heard that there was somebody had mentioned that there was a snowstorm and that slowed down some of the people filing into the building.
It wasn't that bad. There was some snow, but it was like it's Michigan snow, so if we get an inch, we're fine.
Yeah, that's I can relate here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I live in Minnesota. Yeah. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. The crowd was hot for it. I love the Jericho segment backstage. We kept calling the one guy Tom Phillips. That was funny. The tag team.
Now, who's on the list? Who's on the list? Is Tom Phillips on the list? Because if so, that's very unfair.
I think it's like we can just call him pseudo Tom Phillips.
All right. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the tag team match was, the crowd was pretty hot for that with Zayn and Jericho against Owens and Joe. The roof figuratively blew off when HBK came out. So that was a nice surprise for us. I don't know if it was leaked earlier that he was backstage or not. I stayed off with spoilers, so I'd be surprised for anything. But that was a nice, twist. It was acceptable since we didn't get Undertaker, so that was fun. I'm glad I got to see that live.
Absolutely. Anything else?
I'm kind of disappointed we didn't get a Sweet Chin Music there. I was yelling loud for that. That would have been cool, but I understand what they were doing there. That was a fun segment too.
A lot of memories in that building, as they said. I'm sure it was kind of cool for people who have gotten a lot of shows in that building to be at the last one.
Well, it's the last televised event. They actually they advertised a live show that they're doing in June or July or something like that. So there's going to be one more show at the Joe. It's just not televised.
Well, then I take back everything I said.
They were selling T-shirts that said "Last Go at the Joe." I mean, we saw them people wearing them. Okay.
Yeah. They're all live.
Live Raw.
Right. Yeah, Brian Kendrick says read the fine print. That's right.
Right. So if you guys have any questions for me, if not, and that's all I have for you guys.
Well, actually, as you were talking, I was thinking of it, but you covered it in terms of what the chant was, the reaction to HBK. What's your percentage breakdown of pro-Roman, anti-Roman? Did you see any, obviously, the fact that he got beat up by Braun, in the crowd cheered.
Yeah, I would say 70 anti 30, because like there was definitely a lot of pro Roman people there, but not. I mean, it was definitely mostly anti Roman. Like somebody had a sign that said, "Haters are going to hate, but Roman Reigns is still great." That they got shown up on the big screen during one of the commercials. That was kind of funny. Oh, and with Enzo and Cass got a pretty big pop, but there was a lot of Enzo sucks chants going on, like little faint ones. I don't know if they got caught on TV or not, but there were definitely pockets of Enzo sucks that I heard.
They're just doing that to be cool,
yeah.
Right, Corey Graves? Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that.
Okay, I'll ask.
Go ahead.
This,
yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, what was the Jack Gallagher worked the main event tapings. What was the reaction to that? What was the reaction to the cruiserweights in general?
Yeah, good question.
In general, it was pretty quiet. When Tony Nese came out, you could probably hear a pin drop. Gallagher got a pretty good reaction. Aries got a decent reaction, and there was some faint Austin Aries chants, but nothing too spectacular. The match I thought was good that Gallagher put on in the pre-show against Noam Dar. But there were people, you know, chanting for Alicia Fox, well, I think more than they were chanting for either of the other two in the ring.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to ask about the reaction Aries got, but you covered that too. So, no, cool. I don't have anything else, Ted. You did a good job hitting the points of, I guess, the points of controversy. Oh, yeah. Any point where the crowd seemed to lose interest in the show, either stars in the ring going on too long or, you know, too many breaks and somebody else paid the price when they tried to get the crowd back into it?
I thought it was probably the quietest during, like, you know, as far as matches go, I thought it was the quietest during the Bayley Nia Jax match. That kind of struck me, you know, a little odd. You know, but yeah, they didn't seem as into that match as I thought they would be.
Okay. Yeah, cool. All right, well, great. Appreciate it. Anything else you want to add besides the live?
No.
Cool.
Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Denny. Appreciate it. Thanks for being a VIP member too.
All right. Yeah, thank you.
You bet. All right, let's go to one more break, and then when we come back, final run of calls, 515-605-9345. You can also email us a question, as a few of you have done. I'll take a look at those during this brief commercial break, and we might address those also.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at RingRustRadio and email us at RingRustRadio@yahoo.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm Wade Keller, joined by PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil. Let's take another call here. Area code 617, you're up. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Walter from Boston. How are you, Wade?
Doing good. Thanks for calling, Walter. What have you got for Pat me?
Your disdain for Shane McMahon is how I feel about Stephanie. I cannot stand seeing her on TV anymore.
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, she's playing play devil's advocate. She's playing
terrible.
A heel character. Shane McMahon is a heel playing a babyface. So I'm kind of joking, but
yeah,
Stephanie,
with tennis shoes and whatnot.
Yeah, but Stephanie, she's playing a heel. She's going for heel heat. She's trying to get people upset and angry by playing, you know, a version of the Vince McMahon who looks down on the employees, or, you know, sees herself as a higher level of, you know, the job creator who puts food on the table of all the people she works for, because she's created a business and they haven't, and they should grovel at her feet. And that includes Big Show a few years ago during the whole Daniel Bryan thing, all the way through now. What she did on the show with Foley, she's trying to get heat so fans can vicariously take satisfaction, you know, all those times that she gets hers. Oh, wait. That part's missing. Well, anyway,
go ahead. I actually used to agree with you, you know,
yeah,
3 years ago. But
yeah.
She is absolutely go-away heat now.
Yeah.
absolutely go with him. And Hunter coming out tonight. Okay, I won't even get into that. But and then they're bringing Seth Rollins back. Injury prone. You know, who knows if his knee is going to be good for WrestleMania. I love Seth Rollins. He's going to be good for WrestleMania, and I don't think they should force him to come back that soon. I understand it's going to be a big payday for him, and yeah. I'd love to see him face Hunter, but I feel like it's kind of a forced thing to have him come back soon.
I will say I don't think Seth is being forced back. I think Seth, the concern that I was told from people in WWE is the concern is Seth is going to talk his way back and work hard, but he is going to be determined to wrestle at WrestleMania, whether it's good for him or not. And, you know, the people are saying, I hope he wears a knee brace, hope he doesn't have an issue with that. If he does come back, and he, you know, he's always had an issue of wanting to get his spots in and wanting to, you know, he has that indie mentality of these people paid to see me, you know, work my ass off for them. And I want to do it. And it's admirable, but there comes a point where your job is to, and I've said this about Daniel Bryan with the top rope diving headbutt and other things he did too. There comes a point where you're not serving the fans by taking undue risks and giving them more than you need to give them to enjoy seeing you perform. You know, it's equivalent of a rock star. People pay to see him and he blows out his voice on the first three songs and can't deliver the rest of the concert, or blows his voice out on the first night of the concert and they have to cancel the other tour dates. When you do too many spots and you get hurt and there's other safer ways to do things, you're cheating other people and those same fans out of seeing you. And so the fear, I mean, because Seth is very driven in that way, and it's a good trait to have. It's why he is where he is. But I just know a number of people whose opinions I trust have just said, you know, it's so hard to talk him down into a more rational, stable state of mind. And that's why, and that was just a regular reputation. So that's why people are worried that he is going to go to WrestleMania and do more than he should and perhaps do damage. He's older now. And I'm sure with these injuries, it changes the perspective. You don't think you're bulletproof anymore. So, you know, this could be a new Seth in that way. I say all that just to say, I don't think Seth is being forced or strong-armed into wrestling when he doesn't want to. I don't think he feels any undue pressure. I don't think WWE should be I wouldn't blame WWE for putting pressure on Seth, because I think Seth on his own, they have no doubt he will do whatever it takes to be not scratched but on the roster come WrestleMania Sunday. So the blame, if there is any, so to speak, would be on Seth more than WWE in this case. There's rightfully so, there's people concerned, but I don't know how bad the knee injury is. I'm not his doctor. I don't wake up every morning with Seth Rollins' knee knowing how it feels to put weight on it and straighten it out after a day of workouts. So I don't have enough information to, you know, strongly judge whether he and WWE are making a mistake in that regard, unless he injures his knee at Mania, and then I think we can look back and go, it was a mistake.
Fair enough, Wade. You're right about all this.
Okay.
But it's funny that Seth Rollins was a tremendous heel character for a long time. I mean, he was best in business at being a heel. And they completely dropped the ball with that creatively. Yeah. And now he's, you know, coming back, face Triple H, whatever. I can't believe that he went from being so high, like number one, I would say, to being now mid-card guy. And it sucks. Because I was on board. I understand, you know, the indie stuff. I watch the indie stuff, too. And now he's just kind of, you know, mid-card Seth Rollins. Is he a babyface? Okay. You know, mid-card babyface. He's like Sheamus.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I thought tonight was a comeback. And I thought that it was encouraging, Walter. Like, the response he got. Seth is talented. I think he was a really good heel and might be, I was starting to think he might be better long-term cast as a heel than a face. That still might be the case. Pat was tonight an indication that, you know, trying Seth as a face again, but doing it right, unlike the way they did it after Extreme Rules last May and into the summer. And then, you know, obviously having to go a different direction because of the Finn Balor injury, or choosing to, under less than ideal circumstances, is tonight the fire he showed and the response he got an indication that maybe things will be fine with him? Oh, I got Pat muted. Sorry about that, Pat. Go ahead, Pat.
You muted Pat.
I think, yes, I think things are going to be better this time for Seth Rollins. They seem to be, Yeah, I mean, they seem to at least be thinking about how to get sympathy on Seth, how to make him look like a babyface, and I think they did a fine job of that tonight. So, yeah, I think it's an improvement already.
Walter, anything else?
Oh, wait, I had one more question for you.
Sure.
I'm a Chicago Bears fan.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping with the number three pick, we take Mitch Trubisky. What do you think about that?
I have no idea who Mitch Trubisky, who is that?
Mitchell Trubisky.
He's the North Carolina quarterback.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't follow college football.
Oh, okay.
At all.
Maybe the Bears will win the Super Bowl someday.
it would be nice to play the Bears and have them as a Viking fan, have a star quarterback for us to play against, and because it's been fun having Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers as our opponents. So I mean that would be fun, right, Pat?
Oh yeah, that's I just can't tell you how many times I look forward to next season when the Redskins have to play Dak Prescott. Yeah, you bet.
Thanks, Walter.
Good luck.
Good luck to your Bears, except when they play the Vikings. But I'm kind of rooting for them to beat up the Packers. All right.
Fine.
Although I kind of have a soft spot for Detroit. I feel bad. I just feel bad that they kind of tease their fans with a good team and then it just never works out. But anyway, I pay attention to NFL season unless there's huge news, like mega, mega huge news. I pay attention for 17 weeks in the playoffs, and that's it. I'm not an off season fan just because so much of my sports time is taken up with local teams in hockey and basketball and baseball and then wrestling and MMA. So anyway, let's go to Reginald in Portland. Reginald, what have you got for us tonight?
Hey guys, how you doing this evening?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, all right. I got two quick things real fast.
First things first.
I'm really loving what they're doing with Kevin Owens right now. And just the fact that it's really simple, I'm loving like a little promos in the middle of the ring where it's real dim and a little spotlight. And it's just him talking. And it's just as simple as him talking trash. And that's what I really like about that. Cause I feel like some angles just need that. They don't really need, like to be too elaborate. Like I don't need Shakespeare. Just, I hate you. Let's fight. Let's do this. And I'm absolutely pumped for him and Jericho at Mania. I'm going to go as far as to say it might be like top, maybe second best match on the card, personally. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Pat.
I think, second match on the card. Yeah, second best match on the card. That, I can buy that.
What's your Pat? What are the matches you're most looking forward to right now? Where does that rank?
Oh, let's see. Well, Neville and Aries. I'm assuming that comes off. I'm looking forward to that one. Honestly, believe it or not, I am kind of looking forward to the spectacle of Cena and Nikki versus Miz and Maryse. That should be. I mean, come on. You admit it. You can admit it, Wade. You are also interested.
Of course,
in what
yeah. I haven't denied that. I'm definitely curious where that all goes.
And I'm trying. Let's see. The women's match should. I mean, it should be good after all the time that they're going to put into laying it out. And then I have to think. I don't know.
We have 3 weeks to bring it all to a crescendo when it comes to our looking forward to things. I mean, Jericho Owens is high up. Bray Randy is probably the one I'm just most not looking forward to until they prove me otherwise. They're kind of two underachievers in terms of big match, paying off big matches. Undertaker Reigns, Goldberg Lesnar, big spectacle matches. The women are going to have a good women's match, both sets probably, but more so Bayley, Charlotte, Sasha, because it's not, and presumably with Nia Jax, it's not going to end up just being a schmoz. But I think that was something special planned for the Bliss defense. It's shaping up good. I've seen better lineups, I've seen worse. I mean, it's a WrestleMania worthy lineup at this point. And obviously throw Seth Hunter in there. Whatever they do with that, it's going to be intense. It's not going to be a wrestling exhibition. No collar and elbow hookups in that one, folks. All right, go ahead.
Yeah.
We're in the 90-minute mark.
My last thing is, in your experience, Wade, and your experience, Pat, are you catching like Lex Luger 93, 94 vibes from Roman Reigns? Because that's what I'm getting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I look, yes. As somebody on Twitter said, we're looking forward to the Big Dog Bus Tour in the next few weeks at coming to WrestleMania.
Is that what they said?
Somebody on Twitter said that. Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Wow, that would be something better myself. That's kind of incredible, actually, because that's what I was getting. Because I remember even when I was a kid, you know, I mean, because everybody wanted Brett. Like, it was, like, dead obvious that Brett was the guy that everybody wanted, but they were like, no, we're going to give you Lex. We're like, we don't want Lex, we want Brett. I'm just kind of noticing that, so I'm glad someone else called that out before I did. So, but they keep up the good work, guys. Have a good evening.
Thanks very much.
Well,
thank you.
Good
for your original. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Cool. Excellent. We got great callers on the show, but we also have great emailers, Pat. So let's go to an email, related email. This comes from Michael from Georgia. Why are most of the title matches at WrestleMania 3 not singles? The Raw Tag titles will be triple threat. Raw Women's is a triple threat. SmackDown Women's is a weird match. The IC title will have a ladder match. Will it? The only singles matches are Universal, WWE, and US. It's like WWE wants to put everyone on the show instead of having quality over quantity. I've talked about this. I think you should put on the best show you can, and I know it's hard, but I don't think the goal of WrestleMania should be to give everybody a moment on at WrestleMania. All the people on the roster, there's too many wrestlers to get everybody on the show, and if the goal is to get everybody on the show or almost everybody on the show because you're worried about hurting people's feelings, my God, when does management worry about that otherwise? Then they're serving the wrong master. It should be, how do we make this card the best? Not everybody who deserves to be on the roster is going to be, or on the lineup is going to, on the roster is going to make the lineup every year because we're here to serve our fans. And that means some people are going to be left off. Pat, philosophically in general, and then specifically with this card, your take.
Well, I think that's a good point that the writer makes. And really, if you want to get everybody on the show, they have something for that. It's called the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Speaking of which, apparently Big Show is not going to wrestle Shaquille O'Neal this year at WrestleMania.
Unless it's a swerve.
Yeah, that's true. He could show up as a surprise entrant in the Battle Royal.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Shaq could win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal or participate. I mean, there's a chance that, you know, Shaq next week is a special guest commentator and makes a wisecrack about Show, and Show takes on Shaq and, you know, at Mania, and then Show blames Shaq for costing him diverting his attention like Undertaker did with Roman Reigns with his gong sounding, that Shaq diverted Big Show from becoming the first ever two-time winner of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know, it sounds like the match wasn't going to happen. And then there were some rumors that maybe there were talks of bringing it on. And I agree with you, Pat. It seems like Big Show declaring his intent to enter the Battle Royal eliminates it for the most part from happening, unless there's an angle planned in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, Nicholas from Mountain View. I'm not sure what exactly Stephanie McMahon's character is supposed to be anymore. At the brand split, she seemed like she was turning face, but since then, she's flip-flopped back and forth seemingly without reason. At this point, she acts more like a mom trying desperately to be cool at her teenage kid's party. She is my least favorite part of Raw, and I think the show would be a lot better without her. Is there any chance she will step back from being an on-screen character? Pat?
Not a chance, because usually when that question is put, Stephanie or Shane McMahon or Triple H will say, well, you know, I really want to step back and let the other people shine on the show, but Vince just insists that I need to be out there because I'm a big star. That's the pattern. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stephanie is in some ways very, very good at what she does, maybe scary good at what she does. But there's some fatal flaws in her character's presentation. And I do think ultimately the show would be better off with authority figures in the background, showing up every handful of weeks when there's a big issue and you're like, ooh, Mick Foley showed up. This must be a big deal. Kevin Owens is sure going to pay for what he did. And otherwise, the announcers are the alphas, the leaders, the MCs and the hosts. And they tell you the matches that the matchmaking committee has worked very hard all week to put together for you. They don't make up matches on the spot. Nobody walks up to an authority figure backstage and says, I want a match. And then they go, well, I'll put you against this guy. You know, as happened with Jinder Mahal and Nia Jax or whatever. It's just like, when they're making it up as they go, I'm kind of a stickler for that stuff. I like challengers out before champions. I like the main events to close out the show. I like the opening match to be opening match guys, not title shots. And I like matches. I like to tune into a wrestling show that's live thinking that somebody put some thought into the lineup before they went on the air and they're not making it up as it go along. And then I think you build off of that structure. And so I'm against a lot of aspects of the authority figures, but yeah, I think the show is better off without Stephanie's star power. Let her turn babyface. Be the babyface brand ambassador who shows up at WrestleMania to introduce some charity, you know, some charity that's partnered with WWE, and have her speak with her nice smile about what the latest project that WWE has done to make the world a better place. And a few times a year, she pops up and does that. I'd like to see her transition to that and away from being the son of evil Vince McMahon. I mean, I think the product would be better. And I think that, you know, the email and the caller is sentiment that is reflected by a lot of people. I think they get bad vibes about the WWE brand, even though she's sort of flipping about, well, I play a bad guy on TV, but that's not really me. I mean, I think people look at the Stephanie McMahon character as, yes, it's an act, but she hides behind it. But that I think some people think she really thinks some of the things that she says are true, and that it's not just to get heat on her character. And I think it undercuts the WWE brand, even if there's a wink and a nod, an ostensible wink and nod that this isn't real. I think it gives off a bad vibe that the company's run by somebody is like Stephanie. And I think people think she pretends that's not how she feels, but I think that's really how she feels. In other ways, she just is boorish and doesn't get her comeuppance like heels should more often. And that works against things too. So I would wave a magic wand and write her off television, never to be seen again, other than the select options that I gave or scenarios that I gave. But it's not my call, and I'm not as offended by her now as I have been at different times. But having her out there every week doing her shtick, I think, does wear thin and isn't justified. But it's a 3-hour Raw. And Pat, I think they sometimes look at her as a reliable person who can go out there and agitate people on the mic and fill considerable TV time. And that plays into it, too.
Wait, that's wrestling talk. I mean, we don't cover wrestling. We cover sports entertainment.
Yeah. Well,
it's completely different.
They sometimes use that as an excuse to ignore an otherwise sound argument that, you know, that applies to pro wrestling, yeah. But we do something different. So. All right, Pat. Well, I mean, there's a lot we need to talk about, but we're an hour and a half here into the show, so a little bit beyond that. So we will wrap up on that note. I'll be by tomorrow live after SmackDown. And then Wednesday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me live on the midweek flagship. If you didn't catch it, last Thursday, Jim Ross was my guest on the PW Torch Livecast Interview Thursday. Check that out. Some good stuff from Jim, a whole array of recent interviews worth going out of your way to listen to. If you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or otherwise, fantastic. But in order to catch up on some shows you missed, you might want to jump over to pwtorchlivecast.com. And you can go back and hear my interviews with Drew Galloway, Steve Austin. We just did a flashback interview with Mickey James several weeks back. Also, an interview that was actually a few years old. But was a really good interview. 2 weeks ago, DDP was my guest. 3 weeks ago, Disco Inferno. And a month ago, ex-WWE creative team member Matt McCarthy. Our 25 years ago retro radio show was a special interview Thursday best of show, I guess, or flashback show on February 9th. We put up a show from February 9th, 1992, exactly 25 years ago to the day. John Arezzi with Jim Cornette, Dave Meltzer, and Vince Russo all on the program talking about WWF and WCW at that time. It's a cool time capsule of a show like this, but from 25 years ago, talking about a lot of big names, Hogan, Sid, Flair, Savage, and Vince Russo prior to getting a job in wrestling, being a part of that show with John Arezzi. So anyway, a lot of stuff you can catch up on over at pwtorchlivecast.com. If you want to go to pwtorch.com, you can check out Pat McNeil's coverage of the ROH pay-per-view on Friday night, the 15th anniversary show. Also, Sean Radigan put up his report on Sunday on that same show, so you can get a couple perspectives on a big ROH event. And you can also hear Pat McNeil's analysis of that show as a VIP member with Greg Parks. They did a post-show on Friday. Pat, any closing words from you?
I just wanted to thank you again, Wade, for creating Pro Wrestling Torch and giving us jobs and allowing me to put food on my cat's
yes.
food dish.
That is great. Thank you, Pat. Thanks to our listeners who make it all happen. And thanks, I got to say it, most of all, and even you freeloaders, as I have at times called you, but you're not because you listen to the commercials. But to all of you out there, the most valuable people are the VIP members who support what we do with a membership, and we give you a lot in return. And we now go to details on what, quote, a lot entails. After listening to this, we'd love for you to budget a VIP membership as part of your monthly budget. So here are details on what you're missing out on and some maybe incentive to become a VIP member. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Thanks again, everybody, for joining me here today on the PW Torch livecast. Thanks to Pat McNeil for co-hosting with me today. And on that note, I will sign off for today. But go ahead and check out pwtorch.com and mmatorch.com if you're looking for daily news and more on tonight's episode of Raw, including my full detailed report on tonight's episode, start to finish. I cover it live during Raw. You can follow along as you lead into the live cast. Same thing tomorrow night, leading into SmackDown. Join us live on pwtorch.com for my report on SmackDown as it airs, and then switch over to listen live to the live cast. Or, as always, you can listen to us on demand afterwards. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, any other popular podcast apps, or stream us live, or download our show from pwtorchlivecast.com. Yeah.